Hey, Bible nerds, this is Dr. Manny Arango, and I'm your host for the Bible Department podcast powered by Arma. This podcast follows a Bible reading plan we created to help you read the entire Bible in a year. You can head to the show notes or thebibledepartment.com to download our reading plan and join the journey.
This is like our last couple of chapters of the book of Genesis. I'm so glad we got to do this together. I love the book of Genesis. It's a book of origins. I always tell people, if you can hold up eight fingers, you can understand the book of Genesis. It's just four events and four individuals. And those four events are creation, fall, flood, Babel. And then those four people are Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. And we have chronicled through those four events and those four people. And that is the entire story of Genesis. It's a story of origins, right? Creation is the origin of the world. The fall is the origin of sin. The flood is the origin of covenant. And Babel, the origin of language. And then we get the origin of God's chosen family. This one man named Abraham becomes a family, which becomes a tribe, which is going to become a nation. And so the book of Genesis is awesome, and we have made a fun trek through it. Hey, if you have not done today's reading, if you have not read Genesis chapters 47, 48, 49, and 50, then pause this audio, stop this video, go do the reading for the day. Four chapters. It won't take you long. If you've done the reading for today, I'm proud of you. We are going to dive into some context clues, some nerdy nuggets, and a timeless truth like always. First, let's start with context clues, okay? What happens is that really this is the end of Jacob's life, okay? We're going to get the death of Jacob, which we're going to focus on for a good chunk of time. Immediately, Genesis chapter 48, verse 5. I always got to get stuff in Logos before Jacob is going to bless all of 12 of his sons. We're going to get individual blessings for each son. He actually is going to bless Manasseh and Ephraim. These are Joseph's boys. So if you're wondering to yourself, why have I never heard of like the tribe of Joseph, right? You've heard of the tribe of Judah. You've heard of the tribe of Levi. You've heard of the tribe of Reuben and Simeon. As we continue with the story, especially if you get in a book like Numbers, the tribes are going to be a big, big deal. But you never get the tribe of Joseph because Joseph actually gets a double portion. Joseph is going to get two tribes. There is no tribe of Joseph, but you're going to get the tribe of Ephraim and Manasseh. So Joseph's boys actually take the place of his one tribal allotment. So really, and I know a lot of people don't typically admit this, there's technically like 13 tribes of Israel because you're going to lose one. You're going to lose Joseph's tribe, which gets you down to 11, but you're going to add two more. You're going to add Ephraim and Manasseh. And a lot of people consider these half tribes, but anyway, that's getting into a lot of minutia that you don't need to get into. Chapter 48, verse 5 starts out with this. This is Jacob talking. Now then, your sons born to you in Egypt, before I came to you, here will be reckoned as mine. Ephraim and Manasseh will be mine, just as Reuben and Simeon are mine. So the NIV here is translating this a little interesting. It says, just as Reuben and Simeon are mine. That's not what Jacob's actually saying. What he's saying is Reuben and Simeon have royally screwed up. And so actually, I'm just going to take your boys. My grandsons are now going to take the place of my firstborn sons. Now, you can like really see this when we skip all the way to chapter 49. We start reading in verse 3. Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might, the first sign of my strength, excelling in honor, excelling in power. Turbulent as the waters, you will no longer excel. This is not a good blessing. For you went up onto your father's bed, onto my couch, and defiled it. Remember, Reuben is going to have sex with Bilhah, which was Rachel's maidservant, which Jacob had sexual relations with this woman and had children with this woman. And this is why Reuben, the firstborn, is not going to get the birthright or the blessing of the firstborn. So Reuben, you're out. Okay, next, Simeon and Levi are brothers. Their swords are weapons of violence. Let me not enter their council. Let me not join their assembly. For they have killed men in their anger and hamstrung oxen as they pleased. Cursed be their anger so fierce and their fury so cruel. I will scatter them in Jacob and dispense them in Israel. So it's not, if we go back up to chapter 48, verse 5, it says it's not just as Reuben and Simeon in your mind. Literally, he's saying they are Reuben and Simeon to me. Ephraim and Manasseh, your boys, Joseph, are the new Reuben and Simeon to me. Essentially, these boys ain't my boys. These sons have completely, you know, embarrassed me and embarrassed our family, and I'll just take Ephraim and Manasseh as replacements for these kids. The NIV softens the language, but culturally, what's actually happening is that Jacob wants to make sure that Ephraim and Manasseh receive a blessing. Because if you go down to chapter 49, Reuben, Simeon, and Levi do not get blessed by their father, Jacob. I just read the full, you know, version of what gets said. These are not blessings. So now the first son to get blessed is Judah. Okay, here's what it says for Judah. Judah, your brothers will praise you. Your hand will be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons will bow down to you. You are a lion's cub, Judah. You return from the prey, my son. Like a lion, he crouches and lies down. Like a lioness who dares to rouse him. The scepter will not depart from Judah. That's a key line. That's a messianic line. That means that Jesus is going to come from the tribe of Judah. The scepter will not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until he to whom it belongs shall come. This is Jesus. And the obedience of the nations shall be his. He will tether his donkey to a vine, his colt to the choicest branch. He will wash his garments in wine, his robes in the blood of grapes. His eyes will be darker than wine, his teeth whiter than milk. So the promise or the blessing that Judah gets is to Judah, but really it's a prophecy about the tribe of Judah and the fact that the tribe of Judah is going to be responsible for the birth of the Messiah, okay? And this is going to be read messianically, especially through the prophets. Prophets are 100% are going to believe that the Messiah is going to come from the line of Judah, which is exactly what happens. This is why like genealogies are super important when you get into books like Luke and Matthew, because they're going to prove that Jesus comes from the line of Judah, from the line of David. David is going to get born from the tribe of Judah. If you think about this, like God starts out with a big, huge people group, singles out Abraham, and then from Abraham, he creates a family, and he creates a tribe, and he creates a nation. And now we have to figure out which tribe of the 12 tribes is the Messiah going to come from? Which family is he going to come from? And on and on and on. All right, that's kind of just context for what's going on in these couple of chapters. Let me give you a nerdy nugget. Jacob makes Joseph swear. He actually makes him put his hand under his thigh. We probably talked about this before. But yes, that means touching his testicles, okay? That is a biblical euphemism. Hand under the thigh means you are going to testify. And in order to testify, you need testicles. So he is bearing testimony, okay? So what Joseph promises is that he will not bury his father, Jacob, in the land of Egypt, but he will trek his body all the way back to Canaan. Now, this is interesting. Because when Jacob dies, he's embalmed. It doesn't make sense to embalm somebody if you're going to then bury them. This is the most antithetical thing ever, actually. This is totally ridiculous. It takes a lot of cultural awareness to see how how absolutely blatantly ridiculous this is. And I actually would contend that Joseph is in a pickle. Joseph is in a jam because he now has to ask Pharaoh for permission to take his father's body back to Canaan. I think that when Joseph initially makes the vow that he would take his dad's body back to Canaan, he done asked Pharaoh. And now he has to go ask Pharaoh after the fact. And here is a battle of the dads. Remember, Jacob is Joseph's biological father, but they've been in an estranged relationship. For all intents and purposes, Jacob has abandoned his son Joseph, okay? Now, Pharaoh has come into Joseph's life and has given him a ring and a chain and a chariot and a wife and a name. For all intents and purposes, Pharaoh has become a surrogate father. And now you get this battle of the dads, this little microcosm here. You're going to get that there's this battle going on. Jacob wants his son to take him out of Egypt into Canaan. Pharaoh is going to have to make a decision. Am I going to see this act, or am I going to see this request as a rejection? Is Joseph rejecting our Egyptian customs? Is Joseph rejecting me and my role that I've played in his life? And this Pharaoh respects Jacob as a father. This Pharaoh respects Jacob's fatherly role and fatherly voice in Joseph's life. I want to see, like, when we get to Exodus, this is going to get played out, because Yahweh is going to say again and again, hey, Pharaoh, give me my son. And this new Pharaoh in the Exodus story is not going to be as gracious as the Pharaoh here at the end of Genesis. Pharaoh is going to want to control Israel, which is the descendants of Jacob. Whereas the Pharaoh in Genesis respects Jacob's fatherly role in Joseph's life, the Pharaoh that we're going to have in the book of Exodus is going to want to exercise control over what he believes is his. And God is going to say, you're treating them like slaves, but they are my sons. So you're going to get another battle of the fathers. And we are getting a preview of that battle of the dads here at the end of Genesis. There is no need to embalm if you are taking him to Canaan. I think that he's allowing the embalming takes about 40 days. And I think he's allowing the process of embalming to happen because it's an awkward thing to ask Pharaoh to take my dad all the way back to Canaan. I don't think we get the weight of how big of an ask this actually is, but this is a big, big deal. Last nerdy nugget. There's a lot of people who actually believe that Joseph actually gets the blessing and Judah gets the birthright. Remember in the Jacob story, how Esau first got robbed of his birthright, which is a double portion. But he also then later gets robbed or tricked, deceived. Well, he doesn't get robbed of his birthright. He sells his birthright. Okay. Jacob kind of got that one fair and square, not gonna lie. But the blessing, he deceives his father in order to get his brother's blessing. There's a lot of people who say, okay, Judah actually gets the birthright, which means the Messiah is going to be born from Judah's line. So if you look at Jacob's blessing of his boys in verse 8 of chapter 49, you get Judah's blessing is going to start, and it goes all the way down to verse 12. And it's very, very positive. To this point, Simeon, Reuben, and Levi's blessings are not even blessings. They're actually low-key kind of curses. And then everybody else's blessing is kind of short, kind of some one-liners like Gad will be attacked by a band of raiders, but he will attack them at their heels. Asher's food will be rich. He will provide delicacies fit for a king. Naphtali is a doe set free that bears beautiful fawns. Awesome. These are just kind of one-liners. Then you get Joseph's blessing. There's a lot of scholars who say, yeah, Judah gets the birthright, but Joseph gets the blessing. Joseph is a fruitful vine near a spring whose branches climb over a wall. With bitterness, archers attacked him. They shot at him with hostility, but his bow remained steady. His strong arm stayed limber. Because of the hand of the mighty one of Jacob, because of the shepherd, the rock of Israel, because your father's God who helps you, because the Almighty who blesses you with blessings of the skies above, blessings of the deep springs below, blessings of the beast and womb, of the breast and womb, your father's blessings are greater than the blessings of the ancient mountains, than the bounty of the old hills. Let all these rest on the head of Joseph, on the brow of the prince among his brothers. That's a massive blessing. Joseph is the character in the Bible that has the number one, and I mean, it's not even close, the number one type and shadow connections with Jesus. All right, I'll give you all of the comparisons between Joseph and Jesus. Number one, his brothers don't believe him. Okay, Joseph's brothers do not believe him. They don't believe his dream. And Jesus' brothers don't believe him. Number two, Hebrews chapter 4:15 says that Jesus is tempted in every way, but is without sin. Joseph was tempted and was without sin. Jesus is falsely accused. They have to find people to get false claims. The chief priests and the elders have to get liars, people to bear false witness in the trial against Jesus. Joseph is falsely accused by Potiphar's wife. He goes to prison for no good reason. He's actually innocent. So his brothers don't believe he's innocent. He's tempted and he's falsely accused. Joseph is condemned with criminals. Okay, he's specifically condemned to two criminals. One criminal is going to die and one criminal is going to be restored. Okay, the cupbearer and the baker. Jesus is condemned with two criminals. One, who Jesus says, you'll be with me in paradise today. And the other, who is going to die because he's mocking Jesus. Joseph is stripped of his robe and sold for silver. Jesus is going to be stripped of his robe on the cross and sold for silver. How many pieces of silver? 30 pieces of silver. By whom? Joseph is betrayed by Judah, who, if you translate Judah into Greek, that word is Judas. Okay, so Jesus is betrayed by Judas for 30 pieces of silver, and Judah negotiates 30 pieces of silver for his brother Joseph. Joseph is thrown into a pit, thrown into a cistern, and they come back the next day thinking that he's going to be dead, but he's not. He's actually alive. Jesus, come on, I could preach that, baby. Jesus thrown into a pit. They come back after he is dead on Friday. They come back on Sunday, believe that he's going to be dead, but he is risen from the grave. And finally, by the end of Joseph's story, his brothers finally bow. They do. They come to him not knowing his real identity, but they bow. In Philippians chapter 2, verse 10 says that every knee will bow and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. If you're looking for an Old Testament character that actually has the most similarities in terms of types and shadows to Jesus, it is our brother Joseph. All right, let me give you our timeless truth for the day. It actually comes from Genesis chapter 49, verse 27, and it is the blessing of Benjamin. Genesis chapter 49, verse 27 says this, Benjamin is a ravenous wolf. In the morning, he devours the prey. In the evening, he divides the plunder. Man, I have memorized that verse. Actually, I've committed it to memory. I've had that in my mind for years, in my memory bank for years. And here's what this means to me. This is the timeless truth for me. In the morning, he devours his prey. In the evening, he divides the plunder. That the first half of your life is for devouring prey. And the second half of your life is for dividing plunder. I think we have a lot of people who want to diversify when they're young. But the time to diversify is when you're older. The time to commit yourself to devouring one thing and becoming excellent at one thing and mastering your craft. That time is when you're in your 20s, your 30s, your 40s, your teenage years. I know a lot of millennials who it's like they have 15 side hustles. They do like four or five different things. And I always tell people, hey, devour your prey. Get known like as one thing. Do one thing, then divide, then diversify. Another way to think about this is there's a lot of people who want to divide plunder, but they've never devoured prey. There's a lot of people who want to enjoy vacations and vacations, and they want to enjoy things that really is designed to be enjoyed in the second half of your life, but you haven't put in the work to even enjoy any of those things. And so there's a bunch of things that me and my wife are going to do, man. I can't wait to take 3 months and just go explore Italy when we're in our 60s. That's going to be awesome. I'm going to be the cruise king, okay? But that's not the time. It's not the time for that right now. Right now, I'm in the studio. Right now, I'm creating. Right now, I'm producing something. I'm devouring my prey so that I can divide the plunder in the latter years of my life. This is a verse that's honestly become like a life verse for me. Benjamin, a ravenous wolf. In the morning, he devours the prey. In the evening, he divides the plunder. I also think about this as like, I can't expect God to give me public wins if I don't have private devotion. I just can't have mixed match expectations. There will be no plunder to divide if I don't first devour the prey. And I can't try to have my evening plunder if I haven't had my morning prey. I got a job to do in the morning so that I can enjoy the evening. And that verse, woo, I may get a wolf tattoo on me someday
because I like this verse a lot. And how stark forever, baby. Anyway, all right. Hey, that's the end of Genesis, guys. I love you. Tomorrow, we got day 97, and we're going to get into the book of Exodus, one of my favorite books of the Bible. If you're on a streak, don't break it. If you're not on a streak, this is a great time to start one. I love you guys. I'm so proud of you. I'll see you right here tomorrow for day 97.
Thank you so much for joining me on the Bible Department podcast. If this episode was helpful, it would mean the world to me if you'd give us a follow, rate and review the show, and don't forget to share. You can learn more about the show at thebibledepartment.com and find us on Instagram at The Bible Department. If you want to dive deeper into the Bible, you can get free access to our library of courses at thebibledepartment.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. What if I told you that what you're learning in this video was just the tip of the iceberg? The Bible Department is actually powered by Arma. What is Arma? I'm so glad you asked. Arma is an online subscription-based platform that we designed to help people, everyday people, learn the Bible for themselves. We started Arma so that anybody, anywhere, could have access to trustworthy and entertaining Bible and theology content. In addition to this podcast, we have over 60 courses on individual books of the Bible, on theology topics, and on some hot topics like homosexuality, tithing, and women in ministry. But really, Arma is a community of people that I've gotten to know, a community where thousands of people are currently finding family, asking questions, and nerding out on the Bible together. If you want a community to read the Bible with you this year, or if you want to dive into some deeper theological content, or if you want more exclusive access to me and the entire Arma team, how about you go to thebibledepartment.com. I'll be sure to post the link in the description of this video. Let's make this your year to become a Bible nerd.